Show Me the Way, episode 30, The Book Author. In this episode, we talk with Jennifer Peek, CPA, about her experiences in assisting individuals in preparing their businesses for sale. And ladies and gentlemen, it goes beyond that. I don't mean to tell you that's all that we're doing. She brings a lot more to the table. But I finally found someone that can talk about the book, and I'll leave that a little bit of a mystery or magic until later on. But it's an important part of the process. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLP, about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I am your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is someone I've known for quite a while, Jennifer Peek. Jennifer is known for helping people with the sale of their businesses in many, many ways. We're going to focus on what we call, quote, the book, close quote, the document that's put together for sellers and is sent out to prospective buyers. It is a written presentation commonly used to highlight the benefits of the business to potential buyers. But I guarantee you, we're going to go well beyond that. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Jennifer, give us a little bit of a flavor of your background, your early business experiences, so that people can get to know you. Where were you born?
I was born in Independence, Missouri. So I've been around that Missouri, Kansas City area my entire life.
So for people in the other parts of the country that listen in, Independence is where people would jump off and cross the Missouri River and go out to the Oregon Trail or go out to Oregon, California, places west. So she's kind of part of the founding area of Kansas City, so to speak. And you went to school here locally. Where did you go to college?
I did. I got my undergraduate degree from what is now the University of Central Missouri, and I got my MBA from Rockhurst University.
Both schools in the Kansas City area. That's great. Tell us, when you got out of school, where did you start? What did you do?
So when I first graduated from college, from undergrad, I was in public accounting as an auditor. I worked for what was at the time called Baird, Kurtz, and Dobson, which was eventually BKD and is now Forvis, and was always on the audit side and really specialized in construction, manufacturing, those types of clients. Tended to be the small to mid-sized companies that were family-owned. And from there, I went to work for Sprint PCS, which eventually became part of Sprint, and spent the next 15 or so years working for Sprint. And then in 2010, I started my own practice doing what I do now.
And tell us a little bit about that practice, because we're going to focus on the book, but you can do a lot. You do a lot more than that.
Yeah. So that practice is called Peek Advisory Group, and we're headquartered in Kansas City, but we work with clients across the United States. We specialize in the processes that support people who are buying or selling businesses. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the book, but some of the other things that we do are financial due diligence, quality of earnings, which is a form of financial due diligence, as well as business valuations. And then we provide fractional CFO services for about 10 different clients at the moment.
Excellent. So when we talk about the book and giving a little background, so when I get involved as an attorney, I always ask the selling client, do they have a book? And a book is a special device on some explanation of what the company is all about that's being sold. But in your words, Jennifer, what is the book? Let's just start with, what is it supposed to be from your experience?
So the way that I think about the book is I really think of it as a marketing document that's selling the company, right? It's informational, it's educational, but it's focused on the company. So a lot of our clients that we do books for have a ton of experience in selling their services or their products, but not so much selling their company. So it's a different viewpoint for a lot of business owners. And it is really a combination of facts as well as putting those into a story that helps a potential buyer who doesn't know anything about your company really understand it through a document that sets the stage for future conversations. It is not intended to be a whitewash, right? It's not lipstick on a pig, so to speak. There's two goals, right? The ones that I just described. But the other thing that we really want to do is if there are any things that we want to make sure that potential buyers know that aren't the best things that maybe the company has experienced or gaps they have in their management team or maybe some inconsistent financial results, we want to address those up front.
And if you don't address those up front, what happens? I want to hit that one hard right up front of our podcast.
Yeah. If you don't address those up front, one, they're going to come to light. That's going to happen. It's going to happen at the worst possible time. And it is going to call into question the credibility around everything else.
So you get retained. Somebody walks in and goes, Jennifer, I'm going to take my business to market. I want you to prepare a book. Go through kind of an abbreviated scenario of what that conversation looks like and what you're going to be asking of the individual, if you would.
So the first thing that I tell them is, you have just taken on another part-time job or another full-time job, as the case may be, right?
Okay. I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. There's not enough, there's like, just not enough time.
There's just not enough time. Also, you as the seller are never going to have more energy than you do at the beginning of this process.
Right.
Right? So we should gather the documents. We should make, in addition to completing the book, we should also develop the data room and the library of documents while we're going, because you have more energy at the beginning than you ever will again.
Oh, yeah, you said that right. That is absolutely correct.
And it doesn't mean that we're going to catch everything, but if we have tax return, like financial documents are the easy ones to talk about, right? Because everybody knows those are going to be needed.
Right.
So if we have tax returns, we have internal financial documents, we have, employee information, customer list, those types of things. And they can certainly be blinded versions of that. We need to gather those as we go, because all of those components go into the book.
Are there any pictures in this book? I like picture books.
Yes. So I will say, and there may be some variation on this that we tend to talk about later, but one of the big things about the book, and for folks that are familiar with publicly traded companies, I liken the book to an annual report versus like audited financial statements that are like a 10K, right? So it should be intriguing. It should want this, the buyer should want to continue to read, right? So we use any pictures we can find. And that can be logos, whether that's of the company or of customers or of vendors or whatever it may be. We use graphs and charts to illustrate results. We use photos of products and facilities, anything like that, that we can utilize that engages the reader of the document. We absolutely do that.
And how big are these books? If you can make, kind of a generalized observation, because I've seen all sorts of sizes, but I've never seen one to be like War and Peace, so to speak.
Right. I would, generally, and of course, it's going to depend upon the company. Our books are generally anywhere from, I would say, 15 to 30 pages. I know that's a pretty big range. One of the other things, of course, is that you want to get your point across without belaboring your point. It doesn't do you any good for somebody to not get through the document. And relatedly, we are very intentional about how we organize the document.
Right.
Right. So the best stuff goes first.
And at the end of the day, they're going to walk out with a glossy, it'll hardcover. You also email it. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. So we do it in PDF form. It can be printed. It's done in a way that is completely suitable for printing. To the extent that it is part of a process where, you know, copies need to be numbered and those types of things, then those are almost always hard copy. It's much harder to control those electronically. But in either event, they're very printer friendly and organized to be that way.
Excellent. There's really no one size fits all. I mean, it's, you probably have a unique process. Everybody else that does this sort of thing has the same unique process.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of the parameters around how long the document is are things like, do you have multiple lines of business? You know, do you have some very unique or specific product lines that really deserve their own sections? The larger the company, the more varied the offerings of the company, the bigger the book gets.
So that leads me to ask the next big set of questions here. There's two ways to look at the books, one from the sell side and one from the buy side. So let's start first with the sell side. If you're a seller, what do you want to have in the book? What do you not want to have in the book? And maybe that's not a fair question.
So let's talk about what you want to have in the book. You really want some of your basic company background. You want to speak to what's the history of the company? What are your key products and services? Who are your key customer groups? You don't have to name them. Some mm-hmm. people do, some people don't. If you've got your customer names on your websites, then like there's no reason not to put them in the book. But some books don't have customers. We just, you know, call them customer A, customer B, customer C, if we need to do that. Or we refer to types of customers. So if you're, say, you're a construction company that does a lot of different things, and maybe you have residential customers and commercial customers, we would call out things like that. We also want to talk about the leadership, the management, the employees, right? What a lot of buyers are going to be the most concerned about is what happens when Mr. Owner or Miss Owner leaves.
Right.
Right. So we want to talk about the depth of the staff and the management. We also want to talk about anything that's unique to the company from an operational perspective, right? Do you have proprietary systems or solutions in place? Is your software updated so that somebody's not going to have to go through a big conversion? What's your facility like? Where are you located? Is it easy to get to? If that's important. And are there any other issues around the location? So those are the big things that we're looking at. Now, some of the elements that are also part of, say, customers or vendors are, this is our opportunity to address any concentrations that might be an elephant in the room. Buyers can sometimes get concerned if they anticipate a concentration of customers, right? And from the buyer side, they're concerned that that mitigates value. So we want to review if there is a concentration, and if there is, we want to address that in the book, and we want to talk about why that's not a big deal.
Good call. Well, and I've dealt with people where they have heavy concentration, like with one client, although significant, and it makes buyers nervous.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Because what happens if on the second day after I buy your company, that customer walks away?
Yeah. Yep.
So those are the company background elements. There are books that we do address macroeconomic environments. That is very specific to companies. Not every company is going to be inordinately impacted by interest rates or supply chain issues or some of those other elements. So that can be unique depending upon the company. And then the rest of the book is really about financial results, mm-hmm. opportunities for company expansion, different things like that. And as I mentioned earlier, we decide what order we put those things in based on what we really want to make sure whoever is reading that book focuses on, right? So if they only get to page 5 and they read nothing else, did they read what we wanted them to read the most?
Right. Got it. Tell everybody right now how to reach you. We're going to do this again at the end because, you know, this is some information that maybe you can even run a couple of examples by them. How do they reach you? What's your website? Because this would be important information.
So our website is Peek Advisory, P as in Paul, EEK, advisory.com.
Very good. Because I think sometimes some people are audio, some are visual, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
So they probably like to see how you've done it in the past. All right. So we're looking at this on the sell side. Now let's look at it from a buy side analysis. How do I say this? You know, a buyer is going to disregard everything, but, and then you can fill in the blank
right
from there.
Yeah. A buyer is going to disregard everything that they don't care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's assume that your buyer's coming to the table with very, very little information, that they don't know you.
Yep.
Right. Because there are times where companies will be approached by a strategic buyer that's already in their space and they know them. We're going to assume that that's not the case. So the first thing most buyers want to understand is at least a broad financial picture.
Right.
What if and the trends in that financial picture, right? So buyers like consistency. Upward consistency is even better, but consistency, downward consistency is not good. So lots of roller coastering in the financial statements will make a buyer nervous because the connotation is, I don't know what to expect. And if I don't know what to expect, then I'm going to assume the worst.
In every instance, I might add, they're a little cautious.
A little, yes. So that's one thing that also has to be addressed. Right. There can be very good reasons for there to be volatility in the financial statements that may completely be industry driven. A really good example is a construction company that is on a completed contract method.
Right.
That has large projects that extend multiple years.
And here's kind of a question you probably didn't see in our prior conversation. I would be asking, has the book changed or did the book change during COVID? Because that was such a sea change for everyone. Did you do anything different?
Yeah. So there was a couple of things and it went both directions, right? Mm-hmm, like we had some companies who experienced doubling of their business based on the industry they were in.
Yep.
And then we had other companies that just the bottom fell out.
Right.
And the good news is we're sitting in 2023 and we are a solid 18 to 24 months outside of that. And so it's much easier for us to pinpoint anomalies.
Right.
Than it was during, say, 2020 and 2021. Because of course, what happened, going back to your prior comment, right? Of course, what happened was when if you had a company that was declining during that period, the buyers wanted to think that that was the new trend line.
Yes. Yes. Agree with you. I agree with you on that.
Right. So what happened during that time frame was that there was a fair amount of extension to the buying and selling process.
Yep.
So now in the book, what happens is that we're able to pinpoint more specifically the elements of whether it was COVID directly from shutdowns, whether it was supply chain issues related to that, or at least the ones that happened during that time frame. And when the relative pace that had been present before COVID resumed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't the same for every company.
Yep.
And those were really the biggest things. Now we're dealing with interest rates and recession and, you know, that level of concern.
That whole genre, you got that right. And the election and everything else, which is one way for me to call for a broadcast update that we all need to deal with our mindset. This is a crazy time the last 3 and soon to be 4 years. You mentioned, I'm going to venture a little bit away from the book. We can come back to it. But you also mentioned that you did valuations and quality of earnings report. Do you do that in conjunction with the book? Or how do you time doing those things in the context of preparing the book? They're unrelated, but also it is something that is going to be of necessity in doing any type of deals.
Yeah. So one of the things that all of those items have in common, items being the book, evaluation, and a quality of earnings, is that there is a financial term called adjusted EBITDA. And the book, the valuation, and the quality of earnings are all focused on either developing or testing that adjusted EBITDA calculation.
Right.
And so many transactions are priced based on that metric that it's important that those are consistent across the board. Right. So you don't want to have a book with an adjusted EBITDA calculation that wouldn't stand up to a quality of earnings process.
Thank you. Thank you. That is exactly the answer. I think you just got your PhD right there. Seriously, ladies and gentlemen, that's why you do it. That's one of the bigger issues. We know from, in general terms anyway, we talk about evaluation report, and that's usually done by an outside third party. Do you do valuation reports?
We do. And we are certified to do valuations. We hold one of the 2 nationally recognized certifications. And ours is through NACVA. So it's a CVA certification. And the part of the reason that I think it's important to make that distinguishment is that, there are often business brokers that do valuations and other folks that do as well. But the ABV, which is through the AICPA, and then the one that we have, are the only 2 certifications that are accepted by banks.
Right. And every deal going forward, ladies and gentlemen, has probably got a bank somewhere in there. It wasn't that way before 2020, but I think it's going to be that way for a while now.
Yeah. So we're certified to do valuations. We will often be engaged to do both a valuation and a book. What's nice about that is that there is overlap between the 2 of them. And now the seller has a certified valuation in addition to having a marketing book that really gives them more power. We also do pre-sale quality of earnings reports. So
go into that a little bit, because sometimes I hear people use them interchangeably and they're not the same, obviously.
Yeah, they're not the same. So I'll just talk about quality of earnings reports in general. So the whole point of quality of earnings is exactly what it sounds like. And that is, I've got your income statement, Mr. Seller, and I want to make sure that what's in there is actually reflective of the operations of your company, and that what I'm basing my offer to you on is reflective of what I'm going to have on the other side of the transaction.
Right.
So I want to know how confident I can be in not just continuing to run this business going forward, but also paying any debt payments that I'm going to have, or putting any capital into expansion plans, or any of those questions. And there's multiple areas of focus, but certainly one of them in the quality of earnings is our favorite add backs. And add backs are simply costs that have been incurred by the company that aren't really ongoing operations. Personal owner expenses are the most common ones.
Yes.
There can be other ones as well, but those are by and large the most common ones. And so we want to test those. We want to make sure that if the company is reporting revenue, we can see proof of that in the bank statements. We want to make sure that the payroll makes sense in terms of what's in the financial statements versus what's in the payroll report. So it's almost like a mini audit, but it has a very specific outcome.
Yes, very good. Nicely explained too. Thank you. So at this point, we're at the conclusion. We've handed out the book. Are you usually done, or are you brought in to help with other things? I mean, is there ever any updates to the book?
Yes, there are often updates to the book. And for a couple of reasons, right? Like the book comes at the beginning of the sale process. And sometimes that goes very quickly. And sometimes it takes a while to get a buyer to the table. And, you know, it's not uncommon for that to take 3 to 6 months. And during that time frame, the financial results, if nothing else, have grown outdated from where they were. So our most common update is the financial information. And so from a book perspective, we absolutely do that. We are less likely to update valuations or quality of earnings reports because the work that goes into those doesn't become outdated as quickly unless right. something significant happens. You gain a major customer, you lose a major customer. You completely change your revenue recognition process, right? It has to be very large for valuations or quality of earnings to really need to be updated. Not that we haven't done it in shorter timeframes, but it's just less common.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason the book gets updated is that we may be getting consistent questions from buyers that the book didn't address. And instead of putting them in random buyer responses and answering them over and over again, we will make modifications to the book to update that. This could be more information about customers, more information about the responsibilities of the current owner or the ongoing staff. Usually it's things like that that are specific to the company and the company's background if we open it up beyond the financial information.
So is your job done then at that point, or do you do other things for people during the process?
A lot of times we will get involved with coordinating the due diligence.
Let's talk about that. That'd be good.
So generally, if you're a company that's going through a transaction, something called a data room will be set up. And depending upon what professional advisors you have involved, one of them is usually responsible for setting up and managing the data room. And the data room is simply a repository for all of the documents that are being shared between the buyers and sellers to be put in a central location. There are multiple tools for this. The most common ones are things like Ignite or ShareFile or Dropbox or Box.com. Those are the ones that I see used most often. And it just makes it easier for everybody to have the same documents and be working off of them. It is also a much more secure method of moving documents around than emailing them out hither and yon. So they can easily be put into a data room. Leveraging one of my earlier comments, a lot of times we start populating or accumulating items for the data room, whether we're running it or not, as part of the book process. That way, we don't get done with the book and have to go back to the seller and say, okay, we need all of this stuff for the data room.
Excellent. Let's go a little more granular on some certain points that I think might be of interest to everyone. Now, you've helped people put together a book. You've dealt with valuation, quality of earnings, and doing due diligence report. Here's kind of a general question. In your estimation, what are the maybe the top three reasons deals get killed?
Number one, not shocking, time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of energy to get through a transaction process. And the longer it takes, the more tired everybody gets. And so nothing big has to happen. There doesn't have to be this giant blow up or anything else. It can simply be that it just sort of fizzles out. The other thing that happens, I mean, if you're a seller, obviously you've made the decision to sell your company, but the longer it takes to get a deal across the finish line, the more risk there is that something happens.
Yeah.
And it's never something good.
Yep.
A tornado just blew through and took out the whole building.
Yep.
Right?
Literally. Literally.
Literally. You could have a customer that goes out of business. You could have somebody move into the market. It could be anything like that. So you're really just trying to minimize the risk of all of the other things that can happen during the process. So that's time. The second one is that sellers, frankly, take their foot off the gas as it relates to their business. And if they're one of the key drivers inside of their business and they don't continue to operate it the way that they were operating it 2 years ago, the results start declining.
Yeah.
That doesn't instill confidence in any buyer. And we can talk until we're blue in the face about how, well, that's just because, you know, they're ready to sell and they've just taken their eyes off of the picture and it'll be fine, right? It'll all come back. And, you know, there's no guarantee that that's true. And now your buyer is going to have to reverse a trend, which sounds like a lot of work.
Yep. It could be sometimes, not always.
Right. And right. It could be. And sometimes it's not, right? It's simply that you just need to like actually answer the phone when people call you.
Yep.
The third thing I would say is that you have sellers who aren't as transparent as they need to be.
Right. Thank you.
And
hello.
It comes back to bite them.
Yep. Yep. Because you better lay it all out there because it's going to get more expensive after the fact.
Right. And it's very hard to rescue a deal if that's the reason that it started to go sideways.
That is absolutely correct. I can't tell you. Yeah, I've had to go overboard on that, but it's always worth it in every instance. There's no question about it. What are the biggest attributes that make a deal work?
Well, we'll reverse the last thing I just said, which is that you actually have a seller who is willing to lay it all out there.
Yep.
Right? The good, bad, the ugly.
Right.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, beyond the book, it makes the job of your professional advisors easier. If you've hired somebody like a business broker or an investment banker to go market your company, it is much easier for them to find a really good fit for your company.
Right.
If they know all of the stuff about your company.
Yep.
And you really want the most qualified people to come in the door first. And you don't want to lose them because you've got some credibility issue. So you're really enabling everybody in the process to do a better job for you to get your company sold. The other big thing that I think makes a deal work is the responsiveness of everybody involved. Whether that's me, whether that's somebody like you, Dave, whether that's the buyer and the seller. I mean, everybody has to be willing to make the deals work. You and I know, have both been in deals individually and collectively where we feel like we're pushing everybody else, the buyer and the seller, to move forward. And, you know, we're not the ones who should be doing that.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah. So some like the buyer and the seller need to have buy-in. And when they both do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That's not to say that the process doesn't take what the process takes, but when they're both bought in to having a win-win, then it goes much smoother.
Well, you hit that nail on the head. What would be the biggest lessons in your career that you've seen that would like to share with the seller? Maybe like one or two of the biggest points, looking at the totality of doing a deal.
The biggest thing I would say is start before you think you're ready. The problem I see with a lot of sellers is that their decision to sell is often a light switch.
Yes.
I don't want to sell. I don't want to sell. Now I want to sell. I'm done. Get me out. I need to close next week.
So I call it the flash cube effect, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's like a light switch.
Yeah. How long would you say it would take, generally speaking?
I think, you know, from the time you start marketing to the time you're actually going to get closed, and it can happen faster than this, but I think you really should count on a year.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's a bare minimum.
And
right?
It really is going to depend upon the company.
Yep.
And who the right buyer is going to be.
Yep.
Some companies really can only sell to a strategic buyer.
Yep.
And that limits your pool.
Yep. Let's flip it to the other side. What would be the biggest lesson that you would share with the buyer?
So the biggest thing that I would say to a buyer is really jump in at the beginning. So one of the things that I think happens with a lot of buyers is they tend to approach it with more of a tire kicker mentality.
Yeah.
Well, let me just see. It's like they're window shopping.
Yep.
If you're really a serious buyer, then there's a couple of things you should do. First and foremost, before you ever look at any company, because please do not fall in love with one and then have to talk yourself out of it. It's a terrible idea.
Yes.
Right? It's like going new car shopping when you absolutely cannot buy a new car.
Right.
Figure out what your non-negotiables are.
Yep.
Like, if you are hard set that you are only going to buy a company in a specific geographical area, then that's part of your list. And don't let somebody talk you into looking at something that's not in your geographic area.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. If you need it to make a certain amount of money, if you need it to not be in, you know, I don't want to buy a restaurant. Whatever those things are, decide what they are before you ever start looking at anything. So that, I would say that's thing number one. And then thing number two, well, actually that was the first two things. And then the third thing is you really do kind of have to trust your gut a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're not getting the warm fuzzies from the seller or whatever, you know, you may be able to work through that. It may just be a communication gap, but it may not be. So, you know, don't think you can logic your, I mean, this is one of the biggest financial decisions of your life. Don't, you know, mistake your gut feeling for just, well, everybody's nervous because it's one of the biggest financial decisions of their life.
Right. No, you hit that nail on squarely on the head. I tell them you got to really like these guys because it may come back to haunt you.
Yeah. I mean, it's not your yes, that's absolutely the case. And also engage, if that third thing, Mr. Buyer, is happening to you, there are professional advisors who can help you quantify your gut feeling.
So where do you think your business is going in the next 10 years? I mean, you've been doing this for a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Over 10 years. Shockingly.
Yep. Shockingly. So where do you think this is going in what you do? Are you going to be overcome by AI like everybody else?
So I would say that I think there's a couple of things. Certainly, there's elements of business valuation that are headed that way a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So AI from that perspective isn't a new thing. And the elements of business valuations that are relative to what we're talking about, those were already standardized. We've already automated them quite a lot. So I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
The real value, just like anything, is, I'm sure you've heard this, well, I have a business valuation now, I don't know what to do with it.
Yep.
Right? It's not in the completion of any document. It's more about what does that document allow you to do? How do you utilize that? And I think that that's where the experience and the interactions and the interpretations are where the business is headed.
Good call. I agree with you. You are very solid. You're very well thought out. This is not your first rodeo, as we say in this part of the country. How do people get a hold of you if they want to buy your services? Let's go back over that again.
So the easiest thing is to go to our website, which is peekadvisory.com, and just book a call.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it right from the website, connects with my calendar. We don't have to send emails back and forth. And then we can talk about specifically what their needs are. And this is for buyers or sellers.
Excellent.
That's the easiest thing. You can also find me on LinkedIn and send me a message if that's your choice, that's your preference.
How about a phone number?
Yeah. So our phone number is on our website, but it's 816-267-4330.
Well, thanks again to Jennifer Peek. If you're in search of assistance, please go to davesider.com and schedule a consultation. Also, please make sure to subscribe to the show. Rate it, and leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple. Until we meet again, ladies and gentlemen, have a blessed day. This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.